Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, good evening. I'm Larry Halverson from ESPN New York 98.7 FM. I have the pleasure of talking to you about the man you're about to listen to, Doc Stanley, the legendary Doc Stanley. I always say before him there was none, after him there shall be no more. When you listen to Doc Stanley, you have to appreciate the knowledge, the connection. When he's at the ballpark during baseball, he's around the water cooler talking to the athletes. When he's at the basketball games, he's in the locker room talking to players, talking to general managers, talking to front office personnel to bring you the insight why people make the decisions they make. When he's on the ice skating rink, he's talking to some of the few African-American, African-Canadian, African players who are on the ice right now making a difference. You are listening to Doc Stanley on Sports and Death.
Letting the music sink in a little deeper than normal. John Coltrane, dear Lord, opens every show here on Sports and Death. And the boxing way with Lady A here on Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God Radio Network. And we open always with Dear Lord by John Coltrane and the prayer. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day. And more importantly, have your will, have your way. We thank you, Lord, for little things we so largely take for granted. Thank you, dear Lord, for blessings that have come. Will come, all unmerited. As a man once said, although we don't live on Park Avenue, by the grace of God, we don't live on a park bench. And the lady once said, you're God all by yourself. I am. We thank you, dear Lord, as we remember Resurrection Sunday, where Christ defeated death, gave eternal life to the chosen. We love and thank you, Lord, for all things. Just paying homage to you, the one and only true God. In Jesus' name, the Lord. Amen. Doc Stanley, The Boxing Way with Lady A. And you know what we're going to do? A lot of people like this particular thing. We're going to open up talking about some of the music that we have here and play some of it for you in its entirety. A lot of people are like, dang, Doc, we like that. And we usually close out with Billy Paul's classic that I is my favorite of all Billy Paul's songs. And that's the Billy's Back Home. But the one that most people associate with Billy Paul is this one. We're going to play it for you. On the Boxing Way with Lady A, letting music somehow today a little longer play. Ladies and gentlemen, Billy Paul, who was the lead singer of Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes, and then Billy told me he was sitting having dinner at a restaurant in my beloved Fortaleza, in my beloved Brazil, that Harold didn't feel that Billy had the choreography to be a Blue Note. And so the drummer in the band, a gentleman by the name of Teddy Pendergrass, went from the drums, went to the microphone, became the lead singer, the most renowned singer of Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes. The greatest hit of the many great hits by Billy Paul, me, and Mrs. Jones right here, as we wait for the Lady A, as we continue, The Boxing Way with Lady A. But just some music today. And here it is. Billy Paul's Me and Mrs. G.
Jones.
The legendary Billy Paul and the song that became that probably the last great jazz fusion type song by a male artist in the 20th century. That was just that profound and that big of a hit. I mean, the great jazz singers, no question about it. Al Jarreau. That comes to play. You think of Billy Jarreau as jazz infused, jazz induced singers. Maybe that's the word you use. But me and Mrs. Jones and your Trust in God Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God Radio Network, and it's the Boxing Wave with Lady A. You've been asking so redundantly where she actually been on assignment doing some things, so we're going to get her and just talk for a good solid time. My man Mike will be joining us. We're also looking for Mel Cosell Jr. to join us, as well as Dia Zusty Lois. And but just, you know, a lot of you say, "Hey Doc, we like the music." And so no, Billy Paul is the number one hit, the hit that pushed him to the forefront, you could say. It's his signature song, and it's just one of the songs. I know Billy is a personal friend of mine. I met Billy through the legendary international promoter Decio Cotomasio Jr. And in fact, you know, the story, I remember I had landed in Fortaleza, and I was looking for some people picking me up at the airport, and I had, you know, had two outlets. I mean, you're always, you're like a quarterback. Okay, if Moss is covered, I'm looking for Welker. So, and Desi was my backup, and I called him. I said, "Well, you know, there's something up." So I knew he was going to be at the our favorite hotel in, like, 101A, Arena Park. And Tabajada is number two. In fact, at this time, I should probably mention that Sports In Depth on Blog Talk Radio, on the Trust and Guard Radio Network, and Lady A, the Boxing Way, is brought to you by Shapiro's, numero uno, not only in Fortaleza, but in, for me, Dolo Brazil. Sandwich, hamburgers, sandwich, desserts, that's the place to be. And I got to grab that number for you, too, and run it for you later here. And this was me and Mr. Cotomasio ordered a late-night snack, and it was the phony was on the money. They had inadvertently gave us a dessert as a treat, but had left out the sodas. Half hour later, they had brought it. You're in Fortaleza. That's what you want to do. That's where you want to go. It's not McDonald's, okay? It's not Habib's. It's Shapiro. Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio on the Trusted God Radio Network. It's the Boxing Way with Lady A. And we're talking about some of the music that we play here. As a lot of you have said, "Hey, Doc, you know, where's the music come from?" Boom, boom. I think a lot of you know when you hear this this here theme. A lot of you don't know that, you know, myself, but I think you have known. Retired police officer. I'm also, as a stand-up cop, I was Mel Center, the comedy cop, Lady A. And Cincinnati Sea Wings, Mr. NFL 401, of both police department people, who one's a captain, one's a lieutenant. And civil service-wise, you know, Dusty H-Rack Brown X is also retired New York City fire lieutenant. And this song is, you know, I think everybody, Phil Collins in the Air Tonight, from the renowned TV show, the legendary, and Miami Vice. And I've been so blessed in my career, in my life, to have been. Sometimes it's just a blessing, it's not a boast, but I can rarely pick up a magazine and a newspaper and go through it and not see a picture of somebody by the grace of God I've met. And Don Johnson, who played Sonny, got a chance to meet him. And I always talk about my Trust in God, Sports and Death Entertainment, Artifact Hall of Fame. He autographed the cover of Time magazine. It's him and his partner on the cover of Time magazine, Philip Thomas. And this song, it was from the TV show. And in fact, I like this so much. I have a VHS collection of the set, and, you know, Miles Davis appeared on that show. Miles Davis on the show, and it was happening every Friday night. Came on about, I think, 8 and 9, and you watched it. And if you want to go out, then you went out. But Phil Collins from Genesis, In the Air Tonight, and my son Melvin Jr. is one of his favorite songs too. And that's what we play sometimes here. And as you ask so often, what are the songs? Can you hear some of it? Okay, we'll be quiet. Phil Collins, In the Air Tonight. And we're on again tonight. Doc Stanley, The Boxing Way with Lady A on Blog Talk Radio. Sports In Depth on the Trust in God Radio Network. Phil, the floor is yours. This here, Cisco Kid, big hit in the 70s by one of the legendary groups of all time, War. And I play this in tribute to Francisco Guzman, who, a.k.a. is our Cisco Kid, one of the true intellectual minds in boxing. And it was just so apropos. He's the Cisco Kid. We had the theme. War came out with this. They had so many great songs. The World of Ghetto, Slipping Into Dark, which I learned, you know, that was Slipping Into Dark. It was about taking drugs. They also had a great theme that was played through the 1976 Olympics, Smile Happy. And the harmonica player was considered one of the greatest harmonica players in the world and of all times. And this is a song that we play in tribute to our own Cisco Kid, Francisco Guzman. And it's just a great piece of one of the great groups of all time. In fact, I remember the first time I ever saw War. Julius Erving. You know, I always say Julius. I'm saying Erving. Julius gave me a call and said, hey, Mel, Irving Wind and Fire is at the Coliseum tonight. That's where the Nets had played all the games at Nassau Coliseum on Long Island. And so I went out there. Thank God I knew all the guys, security guys. And so I went to the press entrance and they were, hey, how you doing? How you feeling? And unaware, the opening act for Earth, Wind, and Fire that night was a legendary War. I mean, that's after pitching the Willie Mays and Hank Aaron back to back, Koufax and Marichal, you know, Jordan and Oscar, Dr. J, Elgin Baylor, Bird and Barry, just Ollie Frazier. And so I got a chance to see this great group. A song that I play when I close the show is Marvin Gaye's Save the Children. And I just thought it just was so apropos. And, you know, you realize how Marvin was so ahead of the game. That was on his second album. And, you know, he had the first great album, you know, Let's Get It On. And then he came back with what's going on. And Marvin, too. Julius, give me a call. Hey, Bell, you coming out to the show? That Marvin Gaye's in. And I got a chance to go backstage and just brief his hello to the Prince of Pop, Prince of R&B at that time. Said Marvin Gaye, you know, Marvin, for all intents and purposes, did not want to be an R&B singer. He wanted to be a balladeer in the same mold as Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, Sammy Davis Jr., Billy Eckstein, also Johnny Hartman. That's what he wanted to be. But as it turned out, you'll be what the Lord desires you to be. Marvin Gaye, one of the greatest R&B singers of all time. And we always play this. I'll open up some of this for you, okay? Save the Children.
I just want to ask a question.
And
who really
it's,
cares?
You know, great question. Great song.
Save the
tragic
world.
Way in which, you know, Marvin left us is
in
always
despair.
Been something that touch our heartstrings.
Who really
and,
cares?
To have that happen. Well, you know, Marvin, too,
now
that we talked about
time.
The other day,
was... When the world won't be singing.
All right, let's
when the world won't be singing. Flowers won't grow. Flowers won't grow. No. Bells won't be ringing. No bells won't be ringing. Who really cares? Who really cares? Who's willing to try? Who is willing to try to save a world? To save a world that's destined to die. That is destined to die. When I look at the world, when I look at the world, it fills me with sorrow. It fills me with sorrow. Little children today. Children today. Really gonna suffer tomorrow. Really suffer tomorrow. Oh, what a
This is cut is what the world needs now. I play that for my commercials and breaks. Stanley Turrentine, my favorite saxophone player of my generation. The greatest, I think, tenor saxophone player of all time. The question, the man who opens our show, John Coltrane, who was discovered by Miles Davis. Miles Louis Davis discovered Coltrane, and Miles in his autobiography told a very funny story. You know, Train had a missing tooth, and Train had, and that's the nickname for Coltrane. Of course, Train was going to have the tooth fixed, and Miles inwardly was fearful that the loss of the tooth had been so advantageous to his sound that the gaining of a tooth would take away the sound, and that turned out not to be the case. That era, those computations between Coltrane and Thelonious Monk, was in the time span in which Miles, who was a heroin user himself, and he told the guys in the band, understand, you know, you've got a drug problem, okay, but you deal with it, but when you come here, be straight, be ready to play. And he had become sort of disenchanted with Train, who had been messing with it and was coming to the shows looking, you know, suits all messed up. And he told me, hey, look, you know, you got to get yourself together, okay? You got the band for now, okay? Get yourself together. When you get yourself together, come on back. And that time span in which Coltrane left the band or was told to leave the band or was under suspension, A, B, C, and D, he did some collaborations with another jazz legend, Thelonious Monk. And so those collaborations you hear between Train and Monk were in that time period in which he was out of the band with Miles, and then, as you know, he came on back and then started his own band. But the legendary, the incomparable John Coltrane. And with that, we have the goddess of boxing, the first lady of boxing, and the first lady here in Sports in Depth. And we finally are so glad to once again bring you The Boxing Way with Lady A. We'll be joined by a couple other notable boxing experts, but she is the foremost of her time. And we love her dearly and just so glad to have Lady A, The Boxing Way with Lady A. I'm just so glad to have you back here in studio as you've been on so many projects. And, wow, we got some things coming up. Did you get a chance to catch that Brandon Rios fight on Saturday?
Did I get a chance? Come on, Doc. You know better than ask me a stupid question like that. Come on, brother.
Okay, so now, you know, they even it up. Did you think the decision was fair? Is it, you know, because there was some talk about the first fight really not being, you know, that Rios really didn't win the first fight. Your ideas, your synopsis on both of these two fights.
I have two different schools of thoughts on that, Doc.
Go ahead.
You want to hear them?
Oh, yeah, we don't want to hear them.
First is I give credit to Mike Alvarado because he had a game plan. He stuck to his game plan. I think he went in with the mindset that he's going to kind of use the old stick-and-move mentality, try to hit, not get hit, which is actually what boxing is all about. Okay. And then the other side of that was, I think that there were times in the fight when he kind of, you know, people could have said he was running away or whatnot, but at the same time, you saw those spurts in the fight where he got hit with some really good shots. I think in the second and third round, they were going back to back because he got hit in the face with a jab by Brandon Rios and kind of rocked him. And he stayed in the fight. And he fought it. He fought through the round. And then the next round, you saw him catch Brandon Rios with a good shot. And then I think that by the latter half of the fight, I think it was in the 10th round, you really saw him opening up and taking advantage of what, you know, his original game plan was, which I think was just, you know, hitting him, moving him, because he knew that if he stood toe-to-toe with him, like the last fight, he wouldn't have had a shot. So that's just two different schools of thought. I mean, I don't know what the general audience kind of thinks, but
my question to you is what, in your estimation, with your innovative style and expertise, what made you, in your mind, what made him relapse? Did he get tired? Was the fact that he did get hurt by a coming? What made him kind of go back to the old way and then, luckily enough, come back, revert to the plan that he had to win?
Well, the last fight, I think he saw going toe-to-toe with Brandon Rios in the middle of the ring that he was going to get beat up. And I think that, you know, it's not that I'm taking anything away from him, but I think he did his study and he figured, you know what, I'm going to go in there this time. I'm going to go with a different plan, and I'm going to execute it to the best of his ability, which he did. And I don't think that Brandon Rios did anything different halfway through the fight, which he should have made a couple of changes and adjustments to counter. He just kept coming forward, which is kind of the same mentality that Margarito has. You know, he'll hit you, he'll keep coming, keep coming, keep coming. I think that's the same mindset that Brandon Rios had going into the fight, that he would just keep coming at him and be the aggressor somewhat. You know, but I think that the fact that Mike Alvarado executed the way he did and he stood and he fought when he had to, you know, is the reason why he won the fight.
Mm-hmm. So now, no question, it's 1-1. We've got to have a.
Oh, we
got
to have a three. We got to have a three.
And
I think there was a point in that fight, and I don't know if anybody else caught it. There was a point in that fight where they actually had a tweet from Andre Ward. And Andre Ward said, "Oh my God, are we only like in the fifth round or the sixth round or something like that?" And I started fighting. I started laughing when I saw that because I thought it was kind of funny. I mean, these guys actually, you know, the last fight was just a continuation of, you know, this fight was just a continuation of the first fight.
Part
you know?
Two,
and right?
So now we're looking for part three. Who would you, looking at the first fight and the second fight? Can he make the adjustment to win a third fight? I mean, what is your take on how a third fight would go? But hold on real quickly. Before we do that, let's get brought into the Sports In Depth Nation, the boxing way with Lady A. And by doing that, we're going to have none other but one of her most devoted fans. And, of course, Mel Cosell.
Mel!
A.K.A. Little Coco. Ladies and gentlemen, stand back. Get ready as we bring you into the Sports
What's
Nation,
up, Rooney?
The boxing way with Lady A. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Mel Cosell Jr., a.k.a. Little Coco, Sports In Depth, Blog Talk Radio, plus the Guard Radio Network. Rooney, it's showtime.
Doc, I am the hugest fan of Lady A.
My baby.
And that brings me, A, you are always the best. That brings me to say that the Sports In Depth Nation is here. The Sports In Depth panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I'm here. We're here courtesy of the Trust in God Radio Network. And the straw that stirs the drink is here. And that indeed is the incomparable Doc Stanley. Take it away, Doc.
Thank you, Rooney. And with that, we all just with yours. She's here. First lady, SID. First lady, boxing. The queen of the game. My lady, ladies and gentlemen, Sports In Depth, Blog Talk Radio, my social media network, the boxing way, Lady A. And now, once again, having her say, to my only, the legendary, the lovely, Lady A. Now, who's going to win three?
That's a good question, Doc, but I'm going to revert that back to you and say let's look at who shows up. I mean, you know, depending on who shows up. Brandon Rios, at the end of this last fight, one of the things I really liked about him was that he went right to Mike Alvarado and said, "We're going to do a three. That's it. We'll do a three." And he said to him, "You know, I gave you a chance to win it back. Now you give me a chance." And then Mike Alvarado turned and said, "Let's do this." So they both are guys that I think this is great for the sport, Doc, phenomenal for the sport. Rooney, you could agree, disagree, but I think
absolutely
that these
agree.
Are the kind of fights. These are the kind of fights that people want to see. Win, lose, or draw, let's get in there. Let's give the best that we can, and it's like last man standing kind of fight.
Mm-hmm.
You agree or disagree, Rooney?
Oh, I definitely agree. I was telling the same Doc on the a previous show I was speaking to E and
Cisco.
I don't know. Who's our MMA? I remember our MMA guy, Doc, whose name
Cisco.
Always seems to escape.
It's Cisco Kid.
Yeah, Cisco. I was trying to tell Cisco that, you know, they were saying how, you know, the sport is basically dead, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And I was just trying to say that, you know, all we need is a couple of quality fights from some quality fighters, and, you know, it'll be right. You know, do you remember the fervor and excitement when Mike Tyson first came on the scene,
right,
knocking guys out and kind of captured the imagination of the public. That's
right.
What we need is another couple of guys who can fight, who's going to give us a couple of quality showings.
Yeah, but I don't really think it's just, you know what, Rooney? I don't even really think it's just so much guys that are, you know, knockout guys. I think people want to see the back and forth. I think guys want to see, you know, Israel Vasquez, Marquez kind of fight, you know,
quality fights
that guys are
going to
be
yeah.
in there, pound each other, and it's like kind of like last man standing. And I think that that's what people want to see.
And they show some heart and some smarts.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. show some heart and show some smarts. You mm-hmm. know, like you said, it's not so much that they have to have the 30-second or 2-minute knockout. You know, for far too long, what the fans have had to go through, lousy, overpriced pay-per-view cards, lousy, overpriced, near-unexistent co-feature main events and undercards that were lousy, lousy decisions. And, you know, the public got kind of tired of shelling out $55, $60 for that. But it seems like boxing is making a bit of a resurgence, eh? And that's
right.
because for the last few weeks, I've been seeing very much quality fights that capture the imagination of the public.
Yeah, I just got back from Vegas this past week, and I spoke to Doc about this yesterday, and I don't know if this was Doc. You know, I missed the first few minutes, so I don't know if this was a segue into the show and the segment. But one of the things that really bothered me was Tuesday. The fight was Saturday, right? Alvarado and Rios. Tuesday, I go to the window. And I'm like, you know what? I'll make a friendly bet. You know, nothing crazy. I never made a bet in Vegas before. I was like, you know what? I'm here. I'm at the sports book because naturally it was March Madness and everybody's going crazy, right? So I said, you know what? Let me go to the window. And Doc, you know, I mentioned this to you, right? Now I go to the window and I see they had like 2-3 UFC fights posted. So now I'm like, yeah, how you doing? I says, I go to the window, I go to the guy, I go, yeah, how you doing? I says, you know, I'd like to just put a friendly wager, whatever, on the fight for Saturday. They're like, what fight? I go, the Rios-Alvarado fight. And I'm looking at the guy like, are you serious? Like, really? Like, you got two heads? This is Las Vegas, right? You don't have any. He's like, oh, well, we don't have anything on that right now. I said, excuse me? I'm looking around. I'm like, I am in Vegas, right, Rooney? Like, I'm looking around like, this is Vegas, Rooney, right? And he says to me, no, all we have is the Mayweather-Guerrero fight. And I looked at my watch for a second, and I'm like, wait a minute, this is March. That fight is until May 4th. I'm like, so they have a fight that's a month from now, but they don't have the Alvarado-Rios fight, and it's Tuesday? Really?
That's amazing. That fight wasn't even on the board.
He turned to me and said,
really?
We won't have anything on that fight, maybe, and that's maybe, until Thursday, Friday. And I looked at him, and I was like, are you serious? Are you serious? And I'm like, but you got 3 MMA fights up there? I looked at the guy, I was like, all right, thanks anyway. I won't be around, but thank you. And I walked away from the window.
Hey,
of course, that wasn't without me. That wasn't without me putting a bet.
This is what we have said. The sad commentary.
I'm more for betting than anything else.
Right.
But,
let me just interject before you guys.
The point here is that it's not even on the board. I mean,
right.
Of the major sports in this country, boxing is always a betting game. How is it not on the board? Right.
Right. Right. And again, my perception at that point was here I am. And Doc and Doc Rooney, you know, most of the fans know I love boxing. I live, breathe boxing. You know, whatever comes out boxing, I'm always on top of. And I'm standing there and I'm looking at this guy and I'm saying to myself, wow. And it really shocked me because I'm saying to myself, oh wow, you know, Vegas is the place to be if you're a boxing fan. But now I'm saying to myself, was it proven otherwise to me?
Vegas is the place where you bet on boxing.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because remember, on the East Coast, you don't have any sports books places where you can actually go and bet on a fight.
Indeed. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So now.
I think sometime soon they may be doing that in Atlantic City. They can get the various legislatures to go along with it. I think there's.
You know what, Rooney, you run the money. They're working on some things like that. But even now we're talking about it. It's not there. Who knows? How soon will be? But the bottom line, it is in Vegas. I mean, you go down to the ice cream shop, and the guy tells you that he's not selling vanilla ice cream, the most basic of all flavors.
I think a lot of it, the other day I was going down a list and I said, let me think, you know, let's go down weight classes, heavyweights, the champion, Klitschko, cruiserweight, I think it's Hernandez, right? Light heavyweight, Dawson, super middleweight, Ward, middleweight, Martinez, junior middleweight, I don't know if that one's still vacant. Is it still vacant, junior middleweight? Then you got welterweight. Right? You got junior welterweight. You got Danny Garcia. Broner just won lightweight, right? The junior lightweight. Who's the champ there? We got, I know Gamboa was there for a while. But anyway, what I'm getting at is, who do we have that really is a Mike Tyson draw? And I kept racking my brain thinking over and over. And I said, wow, you know, we were talking the other day about really the competition being at 147. And at 135, the lower weights. And maybe if you want to sprinkle in there, you know, 154, you know, you got Mayweather, Alvarez, Cotto, James Kirkland, I guess you could throw in there,
yeah.
Right? At welter, you know, you got Mayweather, Marquez, Guerrero, Pacquiao, Malignaggi, Bradley, Ortiz. You know, so... We're not looking at, I say, there used to be a time when in every weight class, you could be like, wow, these guys, I can't wait to see a fight. I can't wait to see a fight. And when we look and analyze at what the future of boxing is, that's definitely a criteria that I think we got to look at as far as what athletes are in these weight classes, and are they the ones that are going to be attracting the crowds and the money like we had way back when? And I thought it was interesting after the Hopkins fight that Hopkins kind of seemed to be challenging Andre Ward. And
well, he may have been challenging, but he sort of maybe wolfing Andre Ward. Ladies and gentlemen, the first lady of boxing here, and first lady of sports here at SAD, and also Melco Sussman Dream. But real quickly, let's go to Glisten's Gym, where we have the legendary, the man who took BCAP Sports to the heights unparalleled, the first African-American quarterback in the history.
Hey, Doc,
Mike Bellamy. Yeah, Mike, Life of Gleason. Now, Mike, what's happening down there? Golden Gloves you're talking about?
Yeah, we interviewed a couple of Golden Glovers. We were here. I interviewed Jordan Rodriguez, and yesterday I interviewed also Khalid Tawadi. They're fighting in the finals next week, and the Subcut and Vasily, just a few Eastern Bloc fighters. So we're just doing some far preliminary interviews, especially for the finals and for the semifinals, in conjunction with the Daily News. So our sports department has formed also a partnership with the Daily News Golden Glove.
Now, so, I mean, the Golden Glove Finals, Mike, is no longer done at Madison Square Garden, huh?
No, it's at the Barclays for the first time in 86 years.
You know, that's...
So,
it's like
the Barclays is like the new girl in town.
You know what? It's funny you said that, because I remember talking to Cloud, and I asked him, how do you feel about eventually fighting in Madison Square Garden? Is that part of your resume? Is that something that you feel will be, you know, a must in your career? And he said, you know, the Barclays Center is the new Madison Square Garden. And right now, you've kind of validated that.
Yep. So, and all the boxing, I mean, especially for the Golden Gloves, I mean, that's huge. And MSG will not show... Hold on, Doc. I
got
to do something else.
Okay. Mike Bellamy live from the legendary Gleason's Gym, which is now in Brooklyn. It has once in Manhattan and started out in the Bronx.
Hold on, Doc.
Okay. So we're going to try to get Ira soon in the...
I'm on the line, Doc.
Who's it, Ira?
Harold Westbrook.
Oh, Harold. Okay. Harold's there. There he is. Harold jumped in. Surprise. I know Lady A was done. There's a birthday Christmas present all wrapped into one. Harold Weston Jr. is with us, and we're going to go back to Cleveland for a minute. We saw some more boxing with Harold. Harold's out of town, too. He's back with Lady A.
I got to go.
Okay. Hey Mike, is Iris Silverman around?
No, but you know what? Let me let you talk to Jordan Rodriguez real quick. Hey, Jordan. Hey, okay. Hold on. Jordan's okay. Going to be in the finals on April. What are you fighting? April 19th? Okay, but well, he's in the finals. Hey, Jordan, you're
okay,
on Black Talk Radio, sports radio show.
Yeah. Hello?
Hey, George, congratulations.
Hey, how you doing, boss? Thank you.
Yeah, so now you're going to be in the finals. How do you feel about being in the finals?
Oh, great. Great. Not the first time, but this is the first time in the Barclays Center, so I'm in.
So last year you were in the Garden?
No, I was in the Garden in 08 and in 2012.
Now, and what weight are you?
114 open.
114 open, okay. And boxing-wise, somebody stole your bike. How'd you get in the boxing? Somebody stole your bike. Somebody took your lunch money. What got you in the boxing?
I got into a lot of trouble when I was younger. I actually got arrested for two assaults. And somebody actually made the joke and was like, you should get paid for fighting. And I walked into a gym after that, and that was it.
Yeah. Real quickly, panel, anybody got a question for him while we still got him?
Yeah, Dr. Smith. Hey, excuse me.
George.
I just wanted to ask, is are you in the open or the
he's in the open.
You're open
he's
now,
open.
Right? Yeah.
He's open.
Yeah, I've
114.
What happened?
You having trouble making the weight, or you think you'll be moving up if you should do this again, like next year, or you having trouble making the weight at all?
Was that
there, so I can catch you.
No. Okay, you're at 114 now. You see yourself next year going up in weight, or are you going to stay here for a while?
No, I'm actually after this. I plan on winning this, going to nationals, and then after that going pro.
Really? Oh, so
yeah.
So after this, there'll be no more amateur career for you, huh?
Doc, I want to ask him a question.
Just the nationals, and that's it.
Okay, go ahead, Lady A.
Yeah, my question to you is out of the fighters, obviously you're gonna go up if you're thinking about going up in weight or staying the same. I didn't hear your response, but are the fighters in the lighter weight classes? Which fighter do you think more kind of appeals to your style of boxing?
Nobody.
Okay.
And now, George, give us your full name.
Jordan Rodriguez.
Jordan Rodriguez.
Yes.
Okay, like Michael Jordan. And are you from New York originally?
Yeah, I'm from Brooklyn.
From Brooklyn? What part of Brooklyn? Bed-Stuy?
Nah, actually, right now, I was out of Flatbush in Glenwood.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Flatbush, Glenwood. Okay. Well, listen, I know you're busy there. We want to congratulate you on making the finals. And thanks a lot for stopping and talking with us, okay?
No problem. Thank you. Anytime.
Take care, champ.
Thank you. Take care.
Jordan Rodriguez, the 114th, going into the championship round. He won the novice last year, so this year he's trying to win the open. And he says after the nationals, he's going to be a pro. Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio and the Trust and God Radio Network, live.
Hey, Doc, can I say something?
Yeah, go ahead, lady.
Hey, Harold, you still on the air?
Yes, I am, darling.
Hold on. Hey, don't be cutting me off for no love connection. Let me finish this stuff. You know, I knew.
Well,
this
listen,
was a mistake.
I want to talk to my man. Is that all right, my man Harold? What happened?
I knew this was a mistake. I knew.
Listen, I want to talk to my man Harold. What's the matter?
All right, well, go ahead and talk.
Yo, Harold, you know what I told Doc yesterday?
What's that?
I told Doc that he needs to take all of the panel from Sports and Depth out to eat and stop trying to pull off that cheesy black and white picture that he has of you so I can finally see you in real life so you can sign my gloves for real.
Okay. Well, and you know what? We don't need the doc to set that up.
See that? See, Doc, don't feel bad now.
I can't even get a matchmaker's fee here. This is going to lose me and my show. I can't get a matchmaker's fee here. Ladies, the boxing way with Lady A, Harold Weston Jr., Mel Cosell Smith, a.k.a. Little Coco, the first lady of boxing and SID Sports. We're looking for the Cisco kid to join us, and also Mike. But, Harold, you know, he talked about it. Can you go back and talk about how you felt, you know, going into Golden Gloves and winning the Golden Gloves and how much that meant to you, propelling you into your pro career?
Well, I mean, let me tell you the truth, Doc. I didn't like the amateurs.
Really?
I couldn't wait to turn pro. If I did turn pro at 15 years old, I'd have turned pro. But,
really?
I just went through it because of the fact that I knew that's the process I had to go in. I mean, basically, I was young. But my point was that I was glad to hurry up and get through the amateurs. But as soon as I won the championship in 1970, I turned pro right after that. I didn't even wait around for nothing.
Wow. That's amazing. Mike has joined us. Mike, you're glad to have you here on the Boxing with Lady A. Mike, say hello to the panel. That's our my man, Boxing Mike. From Mike, you did a nice interview with 50 Cent. Can we go back and rehash that? And can you highlight some of the things that 50 Cent told you?
Oh, first off, Doc, it's a pleasure to see talk to you again.
Hey, Mikey, how you doing?
That's Lady
I'm well,
A.
I'm well, guys. How are you,
Harold
Lady
Weston
A,
Jr.? And Mel Smith Jr. Go ahead, Mike.
Right. And, Doc, so you want to know, we're talking about 50 Cent. He's having his card Thursday night. You're saying at the Roseland Ballroom with Lou DiBella, am I correct?
50 Cent is part of that card Thursday?
I believe from SMS Promotions, I believe. I think that they are part of that card coming up on Thursday night with Lou DiBella.
You know, this is funny. This is the second time that Lou has jumped into the hip-hop nation because, remember, some time back he was working with Dash, wasn't he?
Yes. From what I remember,
yeah.
Yes. But, Doc, to answer your question, I'm in the process of I'm doing a crossover from, and I've been waiting for the story where I can move hip from boxing to hip-hop and intertwine the both of them.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that there's a similarity, and me and 50 had spoke on this in our interview, and he believes that boxing right now needs somewhere like on the past to MMA where the younger crowd is attracted to MMA because of all the stylish cachet that comes along with it. The nightlife gala in between events. It looks like some form of nightlife there. He believes that because hip-hop has such urban culture, it all could come together. And he believes that that's going to be what's going to save boxing. He thinks that he could feel that he has a niche for it. And, I don't know. I mean, we're going to have to wait and see, I guess.
Yeah, but Mike, don't you think, too, that a lot of it is just because even Harold kind of spoke about this before in the past, that a lot of it is putting together two guys that are going to go in there and really give a performance. Like, for example, like, I know, like, when you have two guys in the ring, like, say, back in 76 when Harold fought Sal Mamby,
mm-hmm.
or when
yep.
he fought Benitez, these are the guys that you put Harold in the ring with a guy like that, they're going to give you a real fight. And I think that when we talk more about, you know, combinations and putting combination of cards together, that's something that people want to see because they know every fight they go to, they're going to see guys give them the performance that they want. So don't you think that has some relevance also? Because I know for sure if I'm watching a fight with Harold and Tommy Hearns, I'm going to get what I want out of that. You know, don't you think that as a promoter, that's also something that's going to give the fans what they want that you need to consider also?
What, the fact that they're going to have a performance or the fights themselves that they need to be better?
Well, I'm saying as far as giving the crowd what they want to see. Like, for instance, we were talking prior to you coming on, we were talking mm-hmm. about what's going to restore the luster in boxing again. And I feel that that's another attribute that needs to be, you know, that needs to be also considered, which is that, you know, in order to do that, you need to have those fighters that you know are always going to perform at the level that they need to, you know, when they're together in the same ring. So I think that you have to be able to combine the fighters together in a fight so that, you know, people could see what they pay for. And like Howard used to say, has said before, he knew that when he threw a fight at the Garden, he was going to get what he needed out of these fighters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't you think that that also is something that's relevant?
It's and again, when I say this, I believe that it's mostly relevant overall because, you know, we could put, and again, I love boxing. I'm an American at heart. As much as I want to see boxing be restored in this great country, the bottom line is, you know, we could give boxing whatever facelifts it needs. You know, we could put all the performances in the world. We could have guys coming in like they're doing the World Wrestling Federation from the top of the stadium. At the end of the day, it's going to come down to real fight fans want to see real fights. And
exactly.
Guys like Harold Weston.
Exactly.
These guys were willing to leave it all in the ring and
exactly.
not risk giving their lives up.
Right.
Are we nothing against my fighters nowadays? You know, at boxing, you know, we got a beautiful comeback in New York. It's just that for some strange reason, we seems like weight division by weight division, we keep losing it to other countries around the world. It's never been like this, and it seems like we're decaying one step at a time. I don't know what the answer is.
Right.
The trainers, the fighters aren't as hungry. Maybe boxing's a global sport. But, you know, it just seems to be that we have to do more and more to try to intrigue people to watch our fighters. But, yet, you see, our heavyweight championship has been gone for over a decade now.
Mm-hmm.
That's gone. You know, it's not coming back, I don't
mm-hmm.
think, anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
They look at the middleweights. You know, these guys, you go to a boxing match in Germany, you got 60,000 fans. You know, again, I'll say it like this. You could have Bernard Hopkins win the light heavyweight championship of the world. Or, for instance, when he fought Joe Calzaghe, they didn't sell out an arena.
Mm-hmm.
But yet in America, John Cena and The Rock will sell out an arena within 24 hours. They can actually reference
The
Rock.
You know, Mike, not to interrupt you, but that fight actually at MetLife Stadium actually is an official sellout. All 70,000 seats are gone.
But it just amazes me how they could even reference. They made a reference. And, again, if you're a kid watching wrestling, it's fine, but it just goes to show you where the heads are of our fans when
mm-hmm.
we actually have Muhammad Ali getting compared to The Rock. Muhammad Ali coming back to winning a world title against George Foreman, being compared to The Rock winning a world championship.
Come on.
I mean,
well, you know what the problem is? The problem in boxing now is Mike, and this is Malcolm Jr. The problem with Lady A and panel, as I was saying, Doc and Howard, is what they need is they need fighters that aren't not just a great fight, but people who are compelling, who can capture the imagination of the public.
Right.
Like, I've been watching ESPN Classic for the last few days, and they've been running both of the Aguayo-Aaron Pryor fights. Not only were those two great fights, but both of the guys were compelling figures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what captured the imagination of the public, and you knew there were going to be two great fights to boot.
Yep.
Yeah,
I agree with you, Harold.
Harold, do you think that it's a combination of that and just the style of fighters, or you think it's just that, just overall, they're just not appealing to the public?
I think that basically the fighters do not have that charisma
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
style about themselves that they can show where they are good fighters. You know what they're trying with the people and the promoters today. They want to tell the people, don't believe your don't believe your lying eyes. Believe me that these fighters can fight. And people are saying, we're looking at this fight, and we know these guys can't fight. That's the reason why we're not coming to the fight or turning into them until we see somebody that can fight a little bit. That's become people are not blind to the fact that they know who good fighters were. They saw the Muhammad Ali on film. They done seen the Joe Frazier. I mean, they done seen the Tommy Hearns and the Sugar Ray Leonard. They knew these guys were good fighters, and they put it all out. Today's fighters are not that kind of way.
Right.
So, guys get low, they quit, and they want to stop, and they want to stop the fight in four rounds. And, you know, it's just a whole lot of nonsense out there. So the public is just tired of it. And understand, the public is paying big dollars.
Yes,
$400 for ring-sized feet, you know, $500 for this. I mean, it's crazy. And then, and then the promoters want these guys to pay that kind of money for guys that don't even want to fight and put their heart into it.
Right.
That's what's wrong with the sport.
Exactly.
And then they have nobody policing the sport that's making them get away with a whole lot of nonsense. And
that's right. That's right. Yep.
The question that I have is, and it's funny that you say that, you pretty much hit the nail on the head there. Again, we could all sit here, you know, I believe in practicing what you preach. You know, I'm nowhere in the mirrors of the lines of Harold. I've only competed on an amateur level. But even to this day, I'm 38 years old, and I believe if I'm going to do something and write about it, I have to compete in it. I train every day. I have a small gym. And, again, it's just my downtime. I compete as well. And the thing that I find here, I just put this in because it's an actual workout. I find myself working harder than some of the fighters that are competing amateur and as pros. And I'm 38 years old. To me, it's like when we were younger, just as amateurs, we ran 6 miles a day. We sparred four times a week. I don't understand what is going on. And, again, it's not – you go to other countries. You got guys from South America, and I understand, you know, there's countries that are hungrier. But at the end of the day, we got you take a guy like Andre Ward, okay? Andre Ward does everything right. He's not a guy that's poverty stricken, that's, you know, coming up because it's hard, and he's
right.
working off aggression. This guy is a guy that just followed the rules, went to the Olympics, followed the rules, followed the basics, did everything that his predecessors did, and he achieved greatness. What is it that our guys can't put together? I don't understand. And
I think it's discipline, Mike. I think it all just comes down to that. It's just discipline. I don't think
well,
that there is discipline.
It goes for two things. You know, Harold talked about people remembering Ali, remembering Durant, remembering Ray Lynn, remembering him. But, you know, sadly enough, a lot of people don't remember them. I mean, we are blessed that we do, and we saw them guys. I mean, to have a Harold West on the show. I understand, too, that you know, it's what Mike said, and as what Harold has always been saying, what Dusty has always been. And, Mike, you know, you're in the minority because there are too many people in this business who don't know the business who, in the words of Marion Boykin, Marion B. Boykin, black, bodacious, brilliant, are perpetrating a fraud. And you said something, too, Harold, while back, that why MMA is taking over because they're bringing you quality fights. You're fighting.
Yes.
Number one is fighting three. Four is
right.
Fighting seven. It's not a lopsided fight. It's not what we talked about the other day. When you talked about on the show Sunday, where the guy called you, he's going to promote himself, but it was a guaranteed win. Nothing
right.
was guaranteed in your day, Harold.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all you had guaranteed in your day. The guarantee in your day, if you couldn't fight, you had a guaranteed ass whooping coming to you.
Mm-hmm.
That was the bottom line.
And let me say this. Here, I'm going to give you a good example. There was a young kid named Pedro Osorio, okay? And he was moving up to heavyweight. He had one fight to win to fight Muhammad Ali for the heavyweight championship of the world. One fight. The fight he was going to have, he's going to fight a guy named Doug Diggins or something. The guy pulls out. They had to fly somebody in the day of the fight, okay? But he wasn't a heavyweight, but he was a big guy. He comes into the fight, day of the fight, to fight Pedro Solo. Solo was undefeated out of 24 fights, all right, at the time. Guard is packed. Who it comes in is Billy Douglas, okay? He fights Pedro Solo in the garden, beats the dog out of him in the garden. Pedro loses his opportunity to fight for the title. But my point is that at this time of his career, he had all these monkeys that he was fighting until he found somebody was going to stand up against him who substitute for the fight the day of the fight. That's what we talk about real fighters. The day of the fight, he comes in to go 10 rounds and beat him in a 10-round fight. Now, that those kind of fighters you don't have today.
Absolutely not.
Well, Harold, let's go back and talk about our dear friend Jose Torres, who he needed an opponent. Charlie Devil Green's in the audience eating a couple of hot dogs. Okay, they bring Charlie Devil Green in. I believe Green knocked Jose down. Jose won the fight, but Jose said, "I know it's time to go, Harold. It's time to go when a guy can come out of the audience and compete."
My point is that what you don't have in this sport right now, you really need. You need trainers. You need good trainers. I mean, you need not the trainers you got running around today. I'm talking about taking trainers from my era and get them out there. Those guys are not there because you know why? They can't get the opportunity to work their fighters like they did before. Everybody, all these promoters, if you don't sign up with them, you can't get on the show. So naturally, nobody can really get the fights that they want because they got to sign with promoters, and the promoter holds you back unless you're the favorite of this stable. And you have to fight on this show. My point is that's where it's all everything has left the sport because the good trainers that could be out there is not there because of that.
Harold, you hit the nail on the head. It's funny that you say that because we were just talking about this the other day. I got a guy from Springfield, Massachusetts, and this kid, I could tell you right now, this kid knows his stuff. I watched the way he follows. I had Gaspar Ortega was my trainer when I was younger, and I had the pleasure of being schooled by a wonderful trainer.
Mm-hmm.
And to be around, being a writer, one of the things that I love most is being able to watch, you know, watching Emmanuel Stewart do his thing, learning from just watching the old-time greats do their craft and teach it. It was a blessing. I got a chance to pick their minds. Now, the thing that cracks me up right now is how you could have guys. People say there's no trainers. Oh, there's trainers out there. The problem is, like you just said, they, if you're not part of the crew, this one guy that trains 100 guys now, I just want to know why, how, like, let's take, you know, again, nothing against Freddie Roach. I don't want to, no disrespect. But there's an old saying, like Virgil Hunter said, from the root to the fruit. In the days of Joe Louis, the days of Ali, there's guys that started, you grabbed an apprentice, you started with a kid, you groomed him, you got him to a title shot. That's how it was. You bring another guy in, he takes over a little bit, shows him the tricks of the trade, but the other guy never left. The problem that we have now is you don't have that anyway. And a lot of the guys, like, look at Aaron Davis, for instance. I could go to Aaron Davis any day of the week. I got a kid from England. He came and fought in the Golden Gloves. He loved training with Aaron Davis. And Aaron will sit there and tell you straight out, he goes, the problem that I have is to find a kid that's going to be dedicated, that I'm going to show my craft to. It's just so hard to find.
Yeah, and, but you know what, Mike? I think we're kind of deviating away from one of the real things that Harold actually mentioned. You know, I think it's a combination of things, yes, but additionally, you look, take a guy, let's just take example Harold. Harold fought in 1976, Harold, how many fights you have? Four?
Yeah, four fights.
Okay,
yeah.
In 1977, how many fights you have, Harold? Four?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So what am I getting at? Well, how often do these guys fight, Mike? Once, twice a year? Give me a break.
Yeah.
They don't have half the watch these guys
the
back
big
then.
Reason, the big reason Donaire won fight of the year, he fought four times last year. That's unheard of.
Come on, Mike.
And you talk about
something. No, I agree with that.
We were talking about guys, and I remember working with Don King. Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Radio Network, Sports in Depth, the boxing way with Lady Mike in your corner. He's here. Harold Weston Jr., he's here. Mel Cosell Jr. is here. And the First Lady, the lovely, the legendary of SIND Sports Lady. You know, I remember something that I'll never forget. And Tony Tucker was training to fight Lennox Lewis, and Stacy McClellan was his trainer. And Hector Camacho came into camp. And I remember Stacy saying, my goodness, he says, I can't. He says, no, Hector Camacho, his first day in camp, he goes three or four rounds. But part of that is Hector cut from the old cloth, and those kind of fighters are not there anymore. How do you talk about guys quitting on the stool, guys, you know, that I've had anymore. But and you, Mike, the problem that you talked about too, which Superman talked about. I mean, these kids don't want to fight. I mean, they don't know how to fight. They don't want to learn how to fight, and they don't have the heart. And this is what's killing the game, along with all the other perpetrating the fraud, trainers that don't know how to train, matchmakers. I remember the great line that Marion Boykin said. They made a guy a matchmaker, and Boykin said the guy couldn't even match his own socks. Gang, give me about 2 seconds. Let's do a quick commercial break, and we'll be right. The guy couldn't even match his own socks. How to be a matchmaker. Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio, on the Trusted Guard Radio Network, and Sports in Depth with the Boxing Way with Lady A. The First Lady of SIND Sports, the lovely, the talent, legendary Lady A. Mel Cosell Smith Jr., a.k.a. Little Coco, Mike in your corner, trainer extraordinaire, and the legendary Harold Weston Jr. Right now, let you know that Sports in Depth is brought to you by Chapitos, and that's in Fortaleza, Brazil. Hey, get online, CEPPITIOS.com.br. They're there. Whatever you want, calzone, sandwiches, burgers, Chapitos. You need a number. 3261-5555, 3261-5555, or 3249-44444, or 3279-3000. Chapitos, no somente número en Fortaleza, no mente en todos, Brazil. Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Radio, and we're also brought to you by Jogs, okay? Jogs, greatest new clothing store for East Tremont here in the Bronx, right between Jerome and Walton Avenue, and you need a cut. And you need to shave. See my man, Panama. Okay, Panama's here, baby. 917-751-3393. 21 East Tremont, 175th Street in the Bronx. About 10 minutes away from Yankee Stadium, where the Yankees lost yesterday. But you never lose when you listen to the Boxing Way with Lady A. And back to the First Lady to have her say, Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio, Trust and Guard Radio Nation, Sports in Depth, the Boxing Way with Lady A. Lady A. Take it away. It's your show, girl.
Well, I think that we're bringing up some good points about some of the deficiencies that have made it in boxing. I mean, along with the judging, we've always talked about that. But I think one of the big things that bears discussing is also the fact that we've discussed ad infinitum a lot about the background about a lot of these fighters and how they train and their discipline and the differences that Harold went through and Dusty went through when they were boxing as opposed to now. You know, and Harold mentioned it on the show about the commissions. I think it's a combination of so many things that are thrown off the sport that it's really hard to get a foothold and say, oh, it's just one thing. You know,
What I wanted to say too, the worst thing of this sport is really putting the sport down. We got too many world champions.
Right.
That's the problem. There's
That's
not
true.
One. You got too many champions running around. Everybody's got a belt.
Well, Howard, how is the, that's another thing too. Is don't get me right or wrong. When I'm right, you know, I can't figure out how you can even define who's a true champion right now.
Right.
It's to me, it's mind-boggling. It's between, how do you justify it? Like, I try to write a piece, and I say, okay, who do you consider the undisputed champion of a division? Who's the best? We have, like, Martinez right now. Okay, so Kelly Pavlik beat Jermaine Taylor, who beat Bernard Hopkins, who Sergio Martinez beat him. You consider him the middleweight champion, I would think. That's the way it was years ago. I mean, just how do you define this? It's like, and then you got the best not fighting the best because whose promoter is not allowed. I don't even know how do you judge who's the better fighters nowadays. It's just
you know what,
so
Mike, you don't even judge it no
let,
more.
Let me just
what
make this quick point, okay? Because when Howell's day, you know, these guys are professionals, okay? When they came into when they were contracted to fight some guy at, say, 147, they showed up at 47 or less, okay? I can't tell the panel how often over the last 2 years I have been shocked that so-called champions literally just dropping their titles on the scales. Coming at their contracted weight and literally dropping the titles on the scales.
And don't care.
Do you guys remember, you know, it's funny that you said it, because it's funny that you said that, because I was just talking about this the other day. Do you remember when Michael Spinks was supposed to defend his title against, I think it was, Eddie Mustafa Muhammad? And Eddie Mustafa Muhammad came in overweight, I think it was, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Somebody correct me if I'm wrong.
No,
the question
he came in overweight.
He came in overweight?
Yeah, he did. Eddie Mustafa came in overweight. You're right.
Yeah. So, now, the fight didn't happen, and it was like, it was looked at as if somebody committed, like, a larceny, or somebody ratted on somebody in some kind of organized crime. This was how bad it was in that day, and that was only a few years back. Nowadays, it's like...
But, okay. Mike, just to supplement what you're saying, which
Mike,
is... I'm sorry, just guys, just a here. Second. Just something, I just want to spit this out and throw this out into you guys' head also. When you look at how... We're discussing about how you kind of define who a real champion is. But you got to look at it. You got to look at who they actually allow sometimes to fight the champion. Look at how the hell did Margarito get a chance to fight Pacquiao? Like, you know, like how are they determining who is even allowed to fight these guys? You know, for the champion, how is it that the real contender, Harold, correct me if I'm wrong, but the real contender should be fighting the champion to win? How the hell does Margarito come out of, and after he was deemed to probably have hand wraps, you know, or I'm sorry, when they gauze him up for the fight, to like have his hand wraps with plaster, now all of a sudden he's going to be able to fight Pacquiao? How the hell does that fit in the mix? You know, these are all points that, I mean, I think are relevant, I mean, to determine, hey, we're going to determine a true champion, but it's also the commission's fault, because how are they letting these guys fight champions?
Well, it is the commission's fault, because all the commissioners supposed to get together in the United States, even the foreign commissioners, and they're supposed to get together and say, look here, we are going to just recognize one champion out of every division, all right? And the commissioners can do that. But they're letting these guys come in an organization. Everybody's coming up with an organization and saying, you can run for be champion of my organization. And that's the crazy part about this sport. How do you let anybody just walk in and just say, I got an organization that I'm gonna have a guy be champion.
And that's why it's not compelling now, Harold. That's why it's not compelling as it used to be. Because everybody knew who the champion was. There's like one champion and we all knew who he was.
Exactly.
That's where the people of the world have gotten very frustrated with boxing, because you don't have that one person, organization, that's the world
tremendous,
champion.
Harold, tremendous point. And you know, it's a double-edged sword, because there was so you go back into yesteryear, and there were so many guys. It's amazing how people talk about how boxing, and they forget how the underworld ran boxing. Ray Robinson is 73-1 before he gets a title shot. 73-1 before he gets a title shot. Sonny Liston, they kept pushing him away from title shot. I mean, so the thing was, to a certain degree, what came to frustration was the opportunity for minorities to get a title shot, but then it kind of got redundant. You know, I mean, you look at him, when Henry Armstrong walked in the room, it's mind-boggling. It was mind-boggling that there was the featherweight, the lightweight, and the welterweight champion of the world standing before you. There was only 8 divisions. He actually won the middleweight. So when Henry Armstrong walked in the room, you saw the featherweight, the lightweight, and the undisputed welterweight champion of the world. The thing that Harold so suddenly talked about was the promoters, these lame duck commissions. I mean, there's nothing different in the hypocrisy and the underhandedness of boxing today as it has been in the past, but the fact that we've lost the sincere boxing fan and we've lost the real people in boxing. I mean, where's Harold Weston in boxing? Where's Marion Brooks in boxing? You know, where was Art Russ in boxing? You know, Roger, there's so many credible guys in boxing that not there. And you keep losing guys like Angelo, Eddie Futch. Okay, didn't talk about Bowie Fischer. Okay, Angelo Dundee. And the sad, as Harold says, Harold, you got to put this thing in trademark. It's sad and touching. And the residue
that Harold said that I have to make this point. I'll start pardon me for cutting you off.
I'm not going to pardon you. Back off.
I think it's relevant
in the sense
that.
Break them team tights off.
I think it's relevant in the sense that. Like Harold was saying in regards to the lack of knowledgeable trainers, guys, the management has also forgotten how to bring guys along. I mean, they're overly careful. I mean, goes from the point, it's one thing that you want to put a guy in over his head, of course, okay, especially if you're promoting him. But by the same token, Doc, these guys are scared to put their boy in with anybody who has a pole.
They're not putting him in, and it showed up in a guy like Soto, which Harold talked about back in the day, but even shows up more today with these guys. But in some cases, it doesn't show up at all, because if they plan it right, and they play it right, you get a guy that can't fight, that's a champion.
Well, let me just say what it is. And it's all a game to all these managers and promoters, all right? They want to get the guy to be 15-0, 16-0, and they get him in the ratings and have him fight for the title. Look at how the whole thing is set up. With guys like $500,000 to $1 million in a title fight if he fights the right guy, okay? So basically, nobody wants to fight nobody because they want to hurry up and get to that championship fight, whoever's there, and get that $1 million if they fight on HBO or Showtime. And my thing is that if you cut all that out, because it's unheard of when a guy is 15-0, he's fighting for a world championship.
But Harold, that goes back to what I was saying, though, Harold. How are these guys fighting for world championships? Who are they fought? Okay, we were talking the other week about Adrian Broner beating up cab drivers. Who has he really fought? You know, he's got nothing but cab drivers.
Absolutely.
You know?
Hey, I read an article that Adrian Broner is special. He can punch, and he's the Mayweather with a punch. Now, leave the brother alone. You know, it's Doc Bailey, Blog Talk Radio, Justin Garden Radio Network, and it's Sports and Death, the Boxing Way with Lady A. Mike in your corner, trainer extraordinaire Harold Weston Jr., the First Lady, and also Mel Cosell Smith Jr. Lady A., run it, girl, your show. Let's go.
No, I'm just saying that setting up somebody to fight a champion, the guy has to come with some, with something, like somebody that he's fought. He has to be a contender, a real contender. How do these guys just step up? Like I said, I just gave the example about Margarito. How was he able to fight Pacquiao? He was a champion. Hey, come on. I don't know, guys. I'm sorry.
It's really disgusting. I mean, you know.
You said it, Harold. It's disgusting. Harold, how is it that you fought 4 times in 77, 4 times in 76, 3 times in 75, and you got guys that are champions that have fought one guy in 18 months or one guy in 1 year?
But what I did, Larry, what I did back then, I told all the promoters, just throw all the names of everybody 47 in the hat and pick out who they want me to fight. And that made it very easy for everybody.
Hey, Harold, in the words of Muhammad Ali, you's a bad man.
Hey, Harold, your repertoire of guys that you fought is nothing compared to what these guys can't even, they can't even come close to you, Harold. They can't even come close to you. Vito
Lady
and Tefermo.
Lady A.
Come on.
Cut the love line stuff, okay?
Oh,
let's keep it
there.
Let's keep it business here.
Stay out of this.
I'm just giving a brother credit where credit is due.
Listen.
All right?
First time I saw Harold Weston, I didn't like Harold Weston. I loved Harold Weston. Harold Weston is my guy in the same way Durant liked me. That was my fighter. I lived and died with Harold. You know what I mean? But Harold
could
fight. Hey,
Doc, let me make a point, Doc, because guys like Harold stayed busy back, you know, in his day, okay?
Well,
that's what it's called,
busy.
Staying busy.
Yeah, I mean,
every 3 or 4 months, Harold was fighting some contender. That's why he was so great, because he fought dudes with different styles. Tommy Hearns, a Mamby. Somebody like that. Guys with different styles and different ways of doing things. That's why when a dude was, when Al came in with a guy, he wasn't shocked by anything that he saw.
Let me tell you a guy that didn't have no style at all, okay? Vito Antifermo.
Vito Antifermo. I knew it. Vito's style was to be in shape, keep coming. A tribute to Vito is this fight with what happened. Who's going to be the first
and
better
and
way
you know what, and that's the exciting part about Vito. There was nothing that he was going to play. I'm going to be in shape. I'm going to take the punch, and I'm going to throw you around. You can't handle it. You shouldn't be in here. And that's how he won the fight. I mean,
yeah.
He was just
yeah,
that
yeah,
kind of guy.
At least these guys came in shape. I mean, it's disgusting what we're seeing. Harold, you're going back to what you said. The thing is, and I'm just going to go out and say it. Harold, you look at Bernard Hopkins. I don't want to take anything away from Bernard Hopkins. But Bernard Hopkins is fighting guys. Okay, Bernard Hopkins is in an era. He's 48 years old. I'm sure he would have fared well in any era. But the guys from your era.
He would have fared that well in my era. He'd have been all right. But he wouldn't have got as far as he did.
Exactly. You guys were cut from a different cloth. You're the last generation that really, like, if you look at, how would I put this? You got the guys that were the kingpins of that era, okay? Just the guys a little bit under the totem pole, if they were in any other generation such as yourself, you guys would have been world champions for years fighting the guys that are fighting now.
I asked Harold that the other day. I asked him if he thought he was born too early, because if he'd have been fighting in this day and era, he'd have been a champion for at least 5 years.
Yeah, but
years,
you know,
probably
I think Harold and those guys cut from the same cloth, and the epitaph is what Buck O'Neill said. You know, no, I was born right on time, because they got to fight against the best, and their accolades come from the best. Okay,
it's the quality of fighters, Doc.
That's the point I'm making.
And then to not be a punk and fight. Listen, Harold fought Wilfredo Benitez not once, twice.
You got a laundry list of the greats in the, right there. You think about what you're talking about.
What it is, it's what Dr. King said. It's not the longevity of one's life, but the quality of one's life. And we're talking about guys who were quality fight. And all these guys, when they see each other, you can see the admiration and respect for each other, and the fact that they are carrying a banner that only they can carry. I mean, the guys today, it's just sad and touching. The guys can't fight. But you know, and we were blessed to see Harold and Duran and Hagler and Leonard
And Cuevas.
And
Ali
and Cuevas. And
Zach, what you're saying, it makes all the sense in the world. See, that's what people don't understand. It's again, you know, very few of us that are left in this sport, and I try to explain to people when you understand the true poetry of the sport. Sometimes money...
Great line, Mike.
Everyone keeps going towards what money buys you. At the end
of
the day, these guys are paid... Not all, but they're going to have to look at themselves in the mirror at the end of the day. And at the end of the day, no matter how much money you have, when you fought the best, that's what you entered the sport for when it was innocent, when you were a kid. You entered it to be the best, and no matter what it is that you do. And this is what Harold has. This is what this era has. It's that level of respect. These other guys that are going to be 50 and 60 years old one day, years to come, they're going to say to myself, wait a minute. Well, I didn't really accomplish that life's worth. Not money. Yeah, they'll be sitting with money, a lot more money than you guys ever did. But you got that self-respect. That's the most important thing, and you die with that.
You're right, Mike. You're right on point there. You're definitely right.
And there's no place. I remember we were at a press conference one time, and Bernard Hopkins said, hey, Harold. You know, when you say Harold Weston, when you say Ray, when you say Curtis Cox, when you say Tommy Hearns, you know, when you say Hedgman Lewis, those who know the game, it's that great line that Marion Boykin talked about. When you get the admiration and respect of people of credibility, and that's what they have. Respect and acknowledgement from the people of credibility. And like I said, Rooney, is what Ray Leonard said to me. It ain't always about the money, okay? Because there's certain things money can't buy. There's certain things money can't. And Rooney, Rooney, this is not for discussion or debate. That's what it is, okay?
Let me say this. I went to a fight and didn't get paid no money at all. I just took a fight because I needed to work, okay? That's the way I was, all right? But the fact
there are a million stories. Eddie Mustafa Muhammad told Marvin Johnson, hey, whatever you want, listen, I'll come down by Greyhound bus. All I want you is in the ring. That's all.
Yeah, but in Howard's era, you had so many guys. They had that mentality.
Eddie Mustafa was from Howard.
Doc, I have a question for Howard. Can I ask my question, please?
Rooney, do I just take a little bait in your voice? Are we getting carried away here?
I have a question
here?
I've been trying to ask for about 15 minutes.
It could have been 15 minutes.
The question that I'm trying to ask is, and I don't know if Howard has ever been asked this before, but I'm going to give it a shot. You know, I watched the Aguayo, Aaron Pryor Rumbles 1 and 2 for the past week on ESPN Classic. I wanted to ask you this, Howard. What would have been your approach, Howard, about if you had ever signed to fight Aaron Pryor? Right. What would have been your approach and game plan to beat Aaron, Howard?
Oh,
great question, Lee.
The thing about Aaron is that you got to be set. At all times, when he attacks, you got to be ready to attack with him, okay? You can't let him take charge of the fight. You got to pretty much be more on the attack than he is. And when you're more on the attack, that gives him hesitation of attacking you. But when Aaron starts to make those moves and move around and everything, you got to be on the attack. When he looks to attack you, you got to attack him a little bit on his attack, and at the same time, then rest it up in that period. I mean, there's
so
just
you said you would have been first, Harold? You would have been
you
first?
Fight him. Huh?
I said, so what are you saying? You have to be first when you're fighting a guy like Aaron?
Yeah, you definitely got to be first and be on. And one thing about Aaron Pryor, you got to be sharp and on notice the whole 3 minutes of that round. Because if you're not, he will knock your head off. Aaron Pryor can punch a little bit, too, now. Everybody don't realize that.
Rooney, again, with another great question only you could do. Harold, now, here's the question, Rooney. Two things, Harold, too, while we got you here. I mean, Lady A's not the only one. I hope Lady A's not the only one that can ask you a question on my show.
My God.
But the thing is, that they said that Aaron had a propensity to be off balance. And the other question, is there any truth to the rumor that Ray Charles Leonard didn't want to fight him, Harold?
Yeah, Ray never wanted to fight Aaron in the Golden Glove. I mean Olympic trials. When they went to the national, Ray was scared to death of Aaron Pryor. Aaron Pryor was vicious, man. I mean, you know, everybody, when you don't run into too many Aaron Pryors, when you do, you don't want to see him no more. I mean, so. Dang it.
And Howard, I know you're right.
I know
you're right, because the lecturers just looked like he was overwhelmed by his style, Howard.
Right. I mean, he was just, I mean, and then he had this craziness about him that, you know, like Ali, that you said, is this guy for real? But when he displayed his skills, then you realize how for real it is. But believe me, Ray Leonard was scared to death of Aaron Pryor. He never wanted to fight. He never did fight Aaron. Ray got out of Aaron Pryor's weight class, so he wouldn't fight him.
I heard that Aaron beat Tommy, too, in amateur, didn't he?
Yeah, he beat Tommy. He beat Tommy in amateur. Everybody don't realize, Aaron Pryor was the best guy out there. And let me tell you, you asked me that question about how I would fight Aaron Pryor. I'm the only one that had a fighter that beat Aaron Pryor.
Did you? Who's that?
That's right, Bobby Joe Young.
Wow. Because they told me Aaron was in the trials and he had an early fight and somebody pulled out and he fought twice in one night or wanted to. And
he wanted to. That's how good Aaron Pryor. But like I said, Aaron was definitely one of the greatest fighters that can walk the planet. I mean, he was that good. You had to really be on your P's and Q's. And when I told Bobby Joe Young when he fought, I said, stay to the body, make sure you keep the jab on him, and when he gets you attack, step back, throw 3-4 combination, stay with him on any time he starts this flurry, and make sure you come out there punching after he punches. Don't be last punching, be the first to be punching. Bobby followed to the T, and he beat Aaron Pryor. He's the only guy to ever beat Aaron Pryor.
Wow.
What's his name again? Bobby what?
Bobby Joe Young.
Bobby Joe Young.
It's in the book.
Bobby Joe Young.
Bobby Joe, I mean, is he, so evidently he must be the kid brother of Mighty Joe Young.
Yeah, well, Bobby was one of those, you know what, it's so funny. Bobby's one of those kids like myself. He had all the talent in the world. It's just that he just didn't have that luck to have him push him over.
How good was Fausto Rodriguez? How good was he?
Fausto Rodriguez?
Yeah.
He was fair. I mean, he wasn't great. He was fair. He was a good, you know, he was a good club fighter type fighter.
Gang, what we want to do here, Lady A, can we do another half hour? You got to go. Can we go for another half?
I'm good. Yeah, I'm good.
Okay, what we're going to do then.
She's all right. She's me now.
Okay.
I'm gonna have to punch out of here, Doc, because I have to go grab the boys at the gym over here. I gotta go to
well, one more time. Can you give us the name of your gym?
Right now it's the Pugilist Collegiate Boxing Academy. That's in New Haven, Connecticut.
Okay.
You got a phone number we can call if somebody wants to join?
Yeah, it's 203-627-5007.
Okay,
and
Mike.
Doc, it's been a pleasure. And
it always is.
Hey, Mike, we'll see you at the fights, Mike.
Yes, ma'am. I'll be in touch with you guys next time.
Okay,
all right.
I'll be back here Monday night.
Keep skipping that rope.
You too. God bless you.
Take care, Mike. All right.
And what we're going to do, we're going to close the first segment of Boxing Way with Lady A and come in with the Boxing Way with Lady A. Part 2. Right now, Larry Hardesty has something to say. Larry?
Thank you for joining us for this installment of Sports in Depth with the legendary Doc Stanley. We hope you join us, and please tell a friend about Sports in Depth, heard every Wednesday and Friday from 12.
Then with that, Rooney, we want you to bring us into Sports in Depth. Michael, take us out, Rooney, and bring us back.
Well, Doc, the Sports in Depth Nation's been here. The Sports in Depth panel's been here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I've been here. We've been here courtesy of the Trust in God, the radio network, and the straw that stirs the drink has been here. And that's been the incomparable Doc Stanley.
Thank you, Rooney. And with that, Frankie Beverly and May say, not going to let you go. Can't let you go. Won't let you go. What's the death? Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God Radio Network. It's part two. It's the Boxing Way with Lady A, Captain Buster Jr., Mel Costell, a.k.a. Little Coco. Mr. Jr. is here, and the Doc. We're here talking about some sweet science. So now, let's step out. Let's go back. Let's listen. Let's learn. Let's digest. And you will learn.
it.
Oh, you'll be happy. It's the boxing way. Good lady here.
Yes, you can dance.
Block Talk Radio on the Stunted Guard Radio Network. And with that, we're going to go ahead and back and let another then medical stuff. Look, Rooney, bring us into part two. Mic on, lights off.
We welcome the Sports In Depth Nation to Sports In Depth Extra. Mic's on, lights off, and now back to the gang and the great Doc family.
Well, the greatness in all of you. Thanks so much, Rooney. Well, with that, let's move in and come on back. And what's bringing you back? Well, I told you before, Sports In Depth. We want to take our hats off first to our sponsor, Chipito's in Fortaleza, Brazil. Hey, you want calzones, you want sandwiches, you want hamburgers, you want something just to munch on and get the best service possible, it's Chipito's. They deliver. You want the number in San Paulo? No, because you got to get in the Fortaleza. 3261-5555. Tres, dos, seis, un. Cinco, 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 cinco. Tres, dos, cuatro, nueve. Cuatro, 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 cuatro. Tres, dos, seis, nueve. Tres, zero, 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 zero. Chipito's. Go online. Chipito's. chipitos.com.br. I got to get that in Portuguese. They are our major sponsor here on Sports Never, along with Panama's Barbershop. No, it's Panama. Just call it 917-751-3393. 200 East 175th Street in the Bronx. But the barbershop, it's Andre's Barbershop here in the Bronx, 10 minutes away from the legendary Yankee Stadium. And we've just opened up around the corner, Jog Greatness Clothing at its best for East Tremont Avenue. That's between Jerome and Walton. And with that, let's get on back. Let's introduce her. Let's all jump for joy because finally, after a hiatus that we thought that maybe she was going to never come back, but she's here, the first lady in boxing, the legendary, the lovely, not only is she three times, but in all things, but three times, where she's three. Ladies and gentlemen, back to the boxing way, 88 here on Blog Talk Radio, the Blog Talk Network, Sports In Depth, the boxing way, the one only, Lady A. Lady A, as Rooney would say, take it away.
Thank you, Doc.
Well, she's known by the millions and millions of her devoted fans. Awesome,
hey. Hey, like that. And right there, the president of the fan club, Mel Cosell Smith Jr. Lady, hey, you know, we got some fights coming up. You know, it's just always, and I say this to you people out there listening, you know, we don't just bring you scores. We just don't bring you sports update. Education. You just learned from Harold, who was the guy that beat Aaron Pryor. You learned.
Oh, I thought you were about to say who rocks the afro very well. I thought. Sorry, I'm sorry. Go ahead, continue.
I guess.
Don't be jealous.
Hey, Harold.
You bring my man on the air, and you think I'm not gonna give him props?
Harold, if you saw that, I guess that black and white wasn't too cheesy. You know what I mean? Hey, Rudy, the black and white
couldn't
be too cheesy if you saw the afro.
Oh,
that's
man.
A funny story.
Rocking it all, rocking the sports world, indeed.
You know, my sister and her friend, in fact, she's the godmother of her daughter, Renee. You know, back in the day, everybody had afro sheen. I went to the guy to El Sway, man. El Sway did your hair so good, man, that you wanted to sleep that night standing up. That's how good he did your hair, man. You didn't want to go to bed, you know. And he had this special afro sheen. And Renee, years later, talked about it. She said, you know, she said, we used to a little bit use some of your afro sheen for our fro, she said. And what we would do, just so you would notice, that we would replenish the missing ounces with water, you know what I mean? Hopefully you never caught up with it. And then we didn't. We got some. You talked about the Brandon Rios fight and the fight this past weekend. We've got the Denier coming against a talented guy. Was a great amateur. I think he's the best amateur in the world. He won two back-to-back gold medals.
Yeah, the Cuban guy.
Yeah, the Cuban guy.
Barn Brenner too, Doc.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, let's talk about that fight. We got some fights to talk about. Let's kick with that. That's coming up in the middle of this month. So let's kick it around. Rudy, you have a particular pick in here. A lot of people say,
well,
you know,
I don't know
the biggest...
much. I only know that the Cuban, his name was Guillermo, no, I'm not pronouncing it correctly. I know he was, a, you know, an amateur champion, a big-time amateur. He's supposed to be a tough guy, and it's supposed to be a quality fight. Daniel is one of the better fighters in the business. It's actually a shame that only the, you know, kind of hardcore boxing fan and journalist types actually know who Nonito Daniel is, because the guy's an excellent fighter. And I wish he was more well known by the general public. The guy's an excellent fighter. I have to go with him, Doc, because like I said, he's an excellent fighter. Always comes in great shape, and it's who I see. Otherwise, I'm going to go with Donaire. But this could be a quality fight. And Doc, you always laugh when I say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Could have possible fight of the year possibility.
Oh my God! Are you really saying that?
Every show, you know what I mean?
At least you know how to maintain consistency.
That's what makes it great. Lady A, his name too, right? I got to pronounce it correctly because it's a Latin name.
Brigandow.
He won the championship. I think he's 11-0. Harold reminded me so much of our late buddy there, our friend Davey Moore. Davey Moore was a world champion at 9-0, and this kid is a world champion at 11-0. With you first, Howard, do you think the kid's over his head?
He don't have much to look at in front of him. I mean, you know, at this time, as bad as these fighters are fighting, I mean, you can be 1-0 and still be champion. That's how pitiful the sport has gotten. The kid himself, I mean, I've seen him like in one fight. You know, he was impressive, but he didn't have nothing in front of him. But, you know, we'll see how it is. I mean, the whole thing about it today, Doc, and this is the reason why I hesitate on talking about certain fighters or fighters in general, is because there's nothing out there to challenge them.
See, I was saying the same thing, yeah.
That's what the big problem is.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's the reason why Bernard Hopkins is still fighting at 48 years old, because there's nothing out there to really challenge him. Gainer and all these other guys, Ward, they've gone away undefeated because there's nothing out there to challenge him. So basically, what do you have anything to prove from if you ain't got nothing to challenge you? And that's what their problem is for these guys.
Yeah, Hal, but let me ask you something. Why do the young boys that fight Hopkins, like you said, you know, he said something that was very telling at the end of the last fight. And he said, you know something, I have a habit of beating these young champions, you know, one after another. And it's true. All these guys that are supposed to be these young lions and young champions, he used the okey-doke every fight, Hal, and beat them. When are these young dudes going to realize you're not going to win a chess game with this guy? Start going to the body from round one.
Well, the problem is that they don't know how to do it. And the other problem is that their method of how they're taught is different from Bernard. You got to understand, Bernard comes from that old school.
Right.
Bernard is teaching them things and showing them things that they ain't never seen before. And
right.
Their whole mental thought when they go into the ring, I'm going to catch him. I'm going to beat him. They just got this aggressive style. Well, Bernard has still got the smart style. He's using smartness, but they're using aggressiveness.
Harold, don't you think too? And one of the things I see a lot with a lot of these fights is that's all I do is watch and try to observe. And what I find that they do a lot, Harold, is that they go in with a certain mentality, and then they can't switch and change in the middle of a fight to do what they have to do to win. It's like they stay with that same thing the whole entire fight. And my question to you is, as a professional,
they can't make the adjustment, Lady A. And the problem
is, my question to Harold is,
hold on, let me make this point. They can't make the adjustment, and the problem is too, there's nobody in the corner to tell them how to make the adjustment. Harold,
you're right, Doc. I mean, the problem, Lady A, is this: is that they learn one way how to fight, okay, and that's the only way they know how to fight. They can't make no adjustments if they've never been taught how to make adjustments. And so when you got – that's how come I was able to maintain and beat the guys I was able to beat and fight the people I was able to fight in boxing, because everybody had one adjustment. There's only very few guys who can make different adjustments in the ring when they're fighting. And we can you can just name, I can name quite a few. Everybody has the same pattern of how they fight. They're not going to make that same adjustment. If they can left hook off a jab, then you expect that. If he can't do it, then I'll know he can't do that. My thing is that that's what's wrong with the fighter. Now, let me give you a point, Lady A. That's back then. Think about now how naive they are of not knowing how to make no adjustments.
Right.
And Bernard knows much, much more than they do, and that's how come Bernard's able to get away because they can't make no adjustments. They don't know how to do it.
Right.
That's what's the problem.
Mm.
And you're right now because it seems like Bernard will come in and use the okie doke on each and every one of these so-called young lions.
Mm-hmm.
He will come and use okie and then how it'll be subtle. Because like I said, you look at him like a Floyd Mayweather or whatever, they're like, why are these guys using the same game plan that everybody else has used to no avail? You're not going to win a chess match with this guy, so you're going to have to try to push him around, rough him up, and use some smarts while you're doing it. Not just come in and fight one style and get beat every round for the whole damn 12.
Right. You know, and the whole thing is that I laugh at the issue and look at everything. My point is that, like I tell these guys, I said, I know how to beat Bernard. I know how to beat Bernard. But the fact is
here's
that
the secret.
You don't
here's
have
the secret.
You don't
nobody
have the
else is able to
know how to do that. Huh?
What's the secret, Al? Because these young boys, he just used the okey-doke, and they don't seem to know how. What was the secret, Al? How would somebody who knows what the deal is, how would you beat them, Al?
Well, you got to look at it like this, too, before Harold even tells you. This guy is 47, 48 years old. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that his body is not that of a 20-year-old, so start pounding at his body. The second half of that also...
I would do that from round one, lady.
Yeah, but also, Harold, another thing that I see, too. I mean, Hopkins was fighting Jean Pascal and doing push-ups when he came out of the corner. You know, he knows how to get in people's head.
That was a tremendous psychological ploy, and to this day, that's one of the most awesome psychological ploys I've ever seen in boxing. It looked like something straight out of the World Wrestling Federation.
See, that's what Bernard does, because if he does those things or grab you or smack you at the weigh-in, all that aggressiveness is in you because you want to get to him. Anything that you have any plan to do, it went out the window because you are only thinking about trying to knock out Bernard Hopkins. And when you're into that kind of thinking, you're going to definitely get into him what he wants you to be. Hesitating to look for that one shot, hesitating to just get close to him. And while you're doing that, you give him time to rest, and then you give him time to throw those two punches he wants to throw in the fight. And when he gets his off, he's going to hold you and set up for his other approach. That's the way Bernard works. But there's a way to beat Bernard that I laugh every time I look at people fight him. I mean, I can have a guy beat Bernard, beat him 10 out of 12 rounds.
Hmm.
That's impressive. That's pretty impressive.
Bernard knows I can do it too. Believe me. He knows. I know. I boxed Bernard.
You did?
Oh, yeah. We boxed when I was teaching him how to fight and get his skills together. When we first got together, I was in the ring with Bernard and showed him a few pointers.
Well, damn, Al, we didn't know that, man. We ain't Howard. You got to fill us in on all this good stuff. We never knew that.
There's a lot of secrets that a lot of people don't know.
Harold, was Eddie Futch with him at that time?
No, Bernard had just got out of jail.
Oh, so he was a kid.
He was a young guy, right?
Did
he ever have Eddie Futch? I knew he had Bowie Fisher.
No, he never had Eddie Futch.
Right?
Oh, okay.
Bowie Fisher was his guy.
I thought it was Eddie Futch. I don't know why.
He came. He was fighting that light heavyweight, which was foolish, and he lost his first fight coming out of jail, and some people, like I told you the story before. You know, they asked me to come down there to see if I can help them out. I refused at first, but I knew a couple of guys that asked me to do it. So I did them a favor, we took the train down to Philly. They put me up in a hotel. I stayed there for like about 5 days. and me and Bernard talked. I looked at work, and I came down there the following month, and I went in the ring and got in the ring with him and boxed him and showed him a few moves and what he had to do and get his stand right and making him, you know, understand what he had to do to be a good fighter. One thing I knew about Bernard, I knew he had the ability to be a great fighter. And the one thing that I told him, because all the things that he was learning, we double-checked back. And I said, no. And this is what was wrong with a lot of fighters. They figure if they fight, they should take 2 weeks off. I said, no. You only have to take 2 weeks off. You knock a guy out in one round, two rounds, you're going to take 2 weeks off? For what? I said, you get your butt back in the gym on Monday, learn a few things that you didn't do in the fight, learn the mistakes that you did in the fight, and you just practice. You ain't got to box. You ain't got to just going in there, going through some routine, keep your body's tone. Bernard kept all the things that I've told him in the years. He has still been pursuing all these years. That's because he's lasted so long. And the thing is that, you know, me and him went toe-to-toe at one time, and we went there. And first thing he said, man, I would never want to fight you, man, back in your day. And I had retired at the time.
Well, I see you always fight this, the other superstars, Howard. You could rumble, no question. But you know something, Howard? There's one guy that I thought should have been better than he is. And I got to tell you, Howard, when he was young up and coming, I thought this guy was going to be the champion for 5, 6, 7 years. And Howard, why wasn't this guy better than he was? What was the deal with Greg Page, Howard?
Because
when I first saw his Royal Kill, I was like, this is going to be the champion.
Yeah, Butch Lewis and anybody that had him. Greg had people. You got to understand, it's like, why is it a fifth grade teacher cannot be a professor in college?
He doesn't know. He doesn't have that to be honest.
All right. My point is that they have not crafted themselves and put themselves to that, take themselves out of that box and try to elevate themselves up to a higher ground. So what happens to certain fighters, they get with certain trainers. A trainer gets to a point to hit the wall where they don't know no more. So all they're doing is just repeating the same thing he's been teaching for the last 7, 8, 10 years. Instead of saying, hey, Doc, can you help me out and see, you see anything that you need to work with, that I need to work on with the kid? That's that little plan, you know? I mean, everybody's got something that they could add into it. That was my success. I had great people around.
Right.
That everybody added into me.
Right.
That made me be who I was. And that was the whole thing.
Right.
Hey, you know, one guy said, don't tell him nothing. I know what I'm doing. I'm the best trainer in the world.
Huh.
And the fighter gets his butt beat. And that's the bottom line.
Mm-mm-mm.
So, Howard, you're saying, Howard, if you'd have been taught properly, say with your skills, say if you'd have been in his corner, are you saying that you would have been able to better mold Greg? Because they got a great size and hand speed, Howard.
Hey, you know, it's the thing where, you got something on your mind that you're good at, that you can teach a guy. I can have things on my mind that I can teach it, and we add all that together, the ingredients. You have a great supper.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm.
Okay? My point is that you got to understand, you don't have all the answers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have all the answers. But the fact is, you put it together, we got it all beat. And that's what makes these fighters greater. Gil Clancy was great at the point that Emil Griffin wasn't just trained by Gil Clancy. He had my father. He had Bernard. He had Sid Martin. He had, you know, he had other guys. Those four, you figure, you got four geniuses in Griffin's corner and in that gym. Tell them, you need to practice on this champ. They go to Gil's pick, and I tell the champ something, they say, yeah. They go and show the champ something.
How did you once tell the panel that on certain nights you would have put email in with Ray Robinson?
He'd
be Ray on certain nights?
He'd be Ray Robinson. Yes, he would have.
Mm.
Wow, no, that's
and let me tell you why, because it's all. Let me tell you why. Ray would have got off in the early rounds. We're talking about 15 rounds. If you ever look at Ray Robinson fights, he's very, very gets tired going down the stretch. He tries to hesitate and play it off and move and pop, pop, move, pop, pop, pop. Griffin wouldn't have let him do all that. Gil would have told Griffin to stay on top of him. Move your head. Pop, move, get to the body. Get in there and work him. And that would have been the whole thing. Ray would have been looking for those 1-2 shots, those hard shots to try to knock Emil out. If it didn't come, Emil beats him by decision.
Wow. Wow.
Well, those guys are machines.
Let me give you this pointer, too. Ray's success was great, and I'm not taking nothing from the great Sugar Ray. I'm saying, but he didn't fight too many African-Americans when he was fighting championship in the world.
That's a tremendous point you brought. Doc Stanley, Block Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Radio Network, and it's the Boxing Way with Lady A, that special segment for it. Now, the point you bring up is just so apropos because he fought Tommy Bell, which was a mandatory that nobody would fight Ray.
Hey, Hal.
Back up with that gangster move, baby. I'll do some fingerprints on you. Back up. No, because what you said, you know, if you look at Ray's dossier, all I see, he fought Tommy Bell and won the welterweight title, didn't fight Bell again. He fought Turpin and fought Turpin again because Turpin had the title, Turpin won the first fight, and if I'm correct, Turpin was winning the second fight.
Right.
And Ray stopped him, and if Ray never fought Turpin, then either.
Yeah, and let me say, that Tommy Bell fight, Ray did not really win that Tommy Bell fight.
Wow.
He won it as split decision in Madison Square Garden, New York, where Ray is the man of New York that was bringing all the hustlers and everybody in the world to come to see Ray Robinson. And he got dropped in the Tommy Bell fight, too.
Yeah, and people, for now you people who are into R&B music, Tommy Bell is the uncle of the lead singer, James Bell, from the legendary R&B group Kool & the Gang.
Tommy Bell was bad, man. Tommy Bell was really... He was a good fighter. They don't talk much about him because, you know, he didn't win that
fight.
But, boy, he was bad. I mean, he could fight. And that's what people don't understand. If you figure that if Tommy Bell could beat Sugar Ray Robinson, you ain't never seen no films of him. He can beat Sugar Ray Robinson, knock him down, go 15 rounds. Man, do I want to see that guy fight.
Yeah. Tommy Bell.
Tommy Bell. And he was a boxer.
Well, hey, listen, hey, evidently to go 15 rounds with Ray Robinson is one thing. To knock Ray Robinson down is another thing. To get a split decision, which meant that on one scorecard you won the fight, Harold, as they said, it's like Budweiser. When you say Budweiser, that says it all. That says all about Tommy Bell.
Hey, and having certain people being your manager and getting 10% of your contract makes it another thing.
Wow.
Hey, Doc, I just wanted to add this quick aside since Harold mentioned
managing
10%. Shockwaves were sent through the world of baseball today, Doc, when Robinson Cano dumped agent. The guy, Doc, hates to negotiate with?
Scott Brosius.
Right, he's jumped Brosius and joined Jay-Z's new company.
Right,
really?
Yep.
Yeah,
you know what?
Shock words are reverberating as we speak throughout the baseball and Asian world with him dumping Scott Brosius and what was going to be about $25-30 million a year. That's what Scott was going to ask for.
Wow,
dumping him
to
join Jay-Z's new corporation.
This is, ladies and gentlemen, this is why these people, Lady A, Mel Smith Jr., there's nobody else in the world that has these people on their panel. Nobody brings this to you. Okay, not only did Rooney tell you what happened, but how it happened. How it just broke down. When you leave Sports in Depth, we give you more than scores. Okay, we give you more than just home run. We give you an education. You leave here, you've learned something. Everybody knows the Yankees won 27 World Championships, but you learned other things. And once again, you heard it here first. Right here. I mean, because it was a known fact that things were going to be tough for the Yankees and maybe for Cano because the Yankees and everybody is not a big fan of Scott Brosius. And now for Cano, I mean, that's telling me there's two things here. It's telling me that it looks like he's going to stay with the Yankees.
Absolutely,
and also,
Doc.
It says a lot for Jay-Z and, you know, agents from men of color. Because, you know, baseball today is systematically leading out players of color. I mean, where are they at? You know,
speaking of Yankee
field.
Stadium, Doc, speaking of Yankee Stadium, that's where Carmen Basilio fought Sugar Ray Robinson in the Bronx in 1957, right?
And I tell you what, it was Yankee Stadium that
wow.
had the last outdoor heavyweight championship what fight and the last outdoor fight of the 20th century when mm-hmm. Ali beat Kenny Norton there in September 1976, and it was a stadium apropos to a certain degree with Emmanuel Stewart, who the great man Borges said as a trainer, Emmanuel Stewart should be in both corners of a major fight where
I want to ask Howard. Howard, you have a fight outside?
Yeah, I have a fight where?
You have a fight outside, like, you know, like Yankee Stadium?
An outdoor arena?
Yeah, outdoor arena.
Oh, my God. You fought in Puerto Rico?
No, the second time you fought, wait a minute.
My first pro fight was outside. In the
where, Harold? Where?
Up in Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Really?
Right. First, we were fighting outdoors.
It was hot.
Yeah, it was so crazy. The kid I was fighting, they thought it was gonna rain, but they put the main event on before us. And everything.
Really?
They said, yeah, they said that. Well, if it rains, you guys still gonna pay? I said, no, I'm gonna be in a fight. So it didn't rain, and so. This kid that I was fighting was undefeated. He had six fights, you know, 6-0. I didn't know how much he weighed. I didn't care. And it was so funny that Duke Savano, who was assistant matchmaker.
Matchmaker. Teddy Brenner.
He never came up that far. And the guy and all the guys that knew him said, what you doing up here, Duke? He said, I'm coming up here to see Lil' Harold Weston, right? He said, oh, he's fighting Ralph Kastner. He said, he's going to get beat because Cass is 6-0. He said, unless his name is Emil Griffin, I doubt that.
Oh, my God. Hey, Rudy, just one small caveat. You know, that fight in 1957 with Sugar Ray Robinson at Yankee Stadium, I believe the Ring Magazine made it the fight of the year in 57 and 58 when Basilio and them fought.
Hey, Lady A, tell them one more time. That fight was what, Lady A?
Fight of the year.
Ah! If I'm correct, too, Reading, boy, we love each other here. Reading.
Hey, by the way, Doc, let me just say this to Lady A. I know she actually is a big wrestling fan also. I just wanted to report, Doc, that as I said on the previous show before, there actually really is real backstage heat between the main eventers, John Cena and The Rock. There's legit backstage, real legitimate backstage heat between the two.
Let me ask Harold, was there ever anybody, everybody hold, real quick. Let's get back to that Colin Basilio fight, and then you can get Harold a question, and then we can get this backstage. But Basilio, before that fight, Ray was approached by the Underworld, which ran boxing. They offered Ray $1 million to throw the fight. And as you know, Ray said...
Seven fight.
Huh?
Which fight? The 57 or 58?
The 57 fight. They because the only reason why they had the rematch is because Basilio won the first fight. But
right.
Ray said he couldn't do it. And the Underworld said, well, you know, the offer was just out there, and Ray wound up losing the fight. But you had a question for Harold Hole, and then we're going to let Rooney give us the backdoor heat on the WWE.
My question was this. Carmen Basilio, the fight that he won against Sugar Ray Robinson... He was actually pissed off at Sugar Ray Robinson because he insulted his wife. And I don't know if that made him even more angry in the ring or anything like that. My question was going to be to Howard. Was anybody you were really pissed off at, Howard, when you went in the ring and fought?
Yeah, Benitez. The first
really?
Fight.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it the first fight or the second fight?
The first or the second fight?
No, the first fight. He made me lose my cool a little bit.
What happened, Harold?
And he had it right. He was like 18 years old. He was champion of the world. And, I know I'm a bad mama jama too, you know what I'm saying? So he had this approach that, you know, you can't touch me. And I just had, you know, it was just the look because you got to understand, we was training in the same gym.
Right.
All right? So he came in early. But when I get in there, he's coming out. And it's just the look, you know, the attitude. All right? So he was just one guy I wanted. But what really hit the mark is when Teddy Brenner wrote in the paper, said in the paper that Benitez is the best thing since Sugar Ray Robinson.
Mm.
And the thing is, I mean, nobody had me to beat Benitez. But what they didn't know, I had already beaten Benitez mentally and physically because I had boxed Benitez quite a few times in our gym.
Over Gleason.
Right. It was the Telstar gym.
Oh, the Telstar. Right? Okay.
Yeah. So the thing was.
Where was that gym located at, Harold?
Right on 28th Street between 7th and 8th. I mean, 7th
okay.
and 6th.
Okay.
So Benitez's father, when he used to bring the Jesus and all the other Latino fighters to New York to fight, he used to bring Benitez and his brother Frankie to come in. And they were young. And so I used to box them, both of them, when I was young. So I knew the styles of both of us. But Benitez wasn't the best of the Benitez.
Yeah.
Frankie was supposed to be the best.
Yeah.
And Frankie was. Frankie was very good. Just that Frankie had caught up in them drugs.
No, you said he had the punch. He had
everything. Frankie was
everything.
But like I said, I was taking them to school every time they came to box me and everything.
Well,
I knew Benitez. You
took them to school that first fight, but they turned around the saving grace and gave Benitez that fight. That fight was no draw, Al. I was there. That fight was
no
draw.
In the second fight, I beat him. I mean, if you look at the fight, I mean, yeah, we're in Puerto Rico, but I was already told if the fight's close, it ain't going to go my way.
Well, you knew. Outside of him having a heart attack and you knocking him out, you wouldn't go. And if he had the heart attack, they were going to be vibing for the fight anyway.
Yeah, because I know darn well, Jim Jacobs, all those guys, there was $1 million contract on the table already to fight Ray Leonard between me and Benita. Whoever wins is going to fight Ray Leonard.
Mm.
Okay? I already signed a contract to fight Ray Leonard. If I won, I would have fight Ray Leonard. My point is that, you know, I knew what the deal was. And Jacobs had put up so much money to get Benitez to sign Benitez and be his manager that, you know, darn well, you know, the stack was against me. At the end of the score, two of the Latino judges in Puerto Rico had me losing by 2 points. But my friend Richard, the one that they paid off, and I'm gonna say they paid his ass off. But the referee could judge it that day. He had me losing 14 rounds.
14 rounds?
Yeah, if you heard the story, you could see. Yeah, yeah.
Ray Charles would have lost 14 rounds.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. Man, Rooney, you want to give us that quick update? We'll get ready to close.
Oh, yeah, no, Doc, I was just saying that this stems from last year's WrestleMania when the two met at last year's main event. What happened is Rock is a big-time movie star. He just made G.I. Joe, and he has a bunch of movies to his credit. Makes about between $5 and $10 million a film.
Uh-huh.
And so when he's not wrestling, he's a big-time movie star. John Cena, on the other hand, has made a few movies, but nothing like, you know, The Rock stature. Cena is mad because, you know, basically every week for 10 years, he's shown up and, you know, takes his lumps and had his neck surgeries and, things that the usual wrestlers go through.
Travel
and he said that
sport.
Rock wasn't dedicated enough. You know, should be showing up every week like he does, that he's basically just a part-time wrestler and part-time actor, and that he doesn't as dedicated as Cena was. Rock came back and said, I got an attitude because he said, how dare you question me? My grandfather was in this wrestling business. My dad, who was the great Rocky Johnson, and was the first African-American tag team champions along with Tony Atlas, so he said, hey, I have a lineage in this business, okay? Don't you question me about my dedication to this business. Anyway, one led to another, the world led to another, was tit for tat, and the two don't care for each other at all, quite frankly. So that, you know, anytime guys don't actually really care for each other at all, and there's some animosity, it makes for the best matches.
In other words, Rooney, real will get real quick.
What, am I predicting a winner?
No, I'm saying real will get real quick.
Absolutely.
Well, it's true. Well, I told you that two guys don't really care for each other. And I start the match with you, Doc, and I don't really care for you. You don't really care for me. So you start the match off with a chop. But I think it's sort of hard. So I come back a little harder with mine. Yeah, well, things get real fast.
Hello, gang. Doc Stanley, Block Talk Radio. Sports and Death on the Tustin Guard Radio Network. The Boxing Way with Lady A. They've been here. The first lady of S5D Sports, the lovely, the legendary. Lady A was back today as we brought you The Boxing Way with Lady A. Mike in the corner was here with some insights and some training tips. The legendary, the first African-American matchmaker in the history of Madison Square Garden. The first man to beat Vito Antuofermo. Come on, leave to do that too. Let me go home and beat this guy, but come on back and serve my country. The man who trained the man who was the first man to beat the Hawk, Aaron the Hawk Pryor. He told you. So much here. It's true. Melco Self, Smith Jr., a.k.a. Little Go. Tell them like it is all the time. Robinson Cano has said, you got to go. This guy's ferocious. He's going with Jay-Z. That's Beyonce's husband. And so, we've got a black agent that's about ready to do a big, big contract opening days at Yankees.
Hey, Doc, just, I'm sorry, Doc, not to break it up, but wasn't it Scott Boras?
I'm sorry. Scott Boras. Thanks so much, Lady A.
I got
excited. You know, hey, I know what? Whatever the last name is, as Marvin Gaye once said, he's not doggone, he's long gone. And we are about to break it into Black Lady A. Well, that's it. We're going to wrap this up one more time. You know, we got two fights coming up this month. And we also have Guerrero against Mayweather. A couple issues there. Guerrero was not trying to get on the plane with a gun. He was trying to put a gun in the case to be transported to the next site. So he didn't try to get on the plane with a gun. The so-called guys who came up positive on the test, it's not the same. It's not true. No negativity there. We'll give you some more on that. Doc Stanley, Blog Talk Radio, the Tustin Guard Radio Network. We'll be back here Sunday night at 11 with the whole crew. Mel, Cosell, Smith Jr., a.k.a. Little Coco, the first lady at SID, Lady A. Devil Barrel, Harold Weston Jr., Francisco, the Cisco Kid Judgment, Dusty H. Rack, X. Brown, and Cincinnati Seaweed, Nate B. Berger, Baseball, and Luke the Hoops, the Heart. Right here, Sunday, 11 to 2, 4 to 7, Live Talk Radio on the Tustin Guard Radio Network. We're about ready to say sayonara. God bless you all. Tustin Guard. And now, Marvin Gaye will have his say. And we will have to say goodnight. Mr. Gaye.
I just want to ask a question. Who really cares? Save a world in despair. Who really cares? There'll come a time. When the world won't be singing.
When the world won't be singing.
Flowers won't grow.
Flowers won't grow, no.
Bells won't be ringing.
No, bells won't be ringing.
Who really cares?
Who really cares?
Who's willing to try?
Who is willing to try
to save a world?
To save a world
that's destined to
that
die.
Is destined to die.
When I look at the world,
when I look at the world,
it fills me with sorrow.
It fills me with sorrow.
Little children today.
Children today.
Really gonna suffer tomorrow.
Really suffer tomorrow. what a shame.
Such a bad way to
such
live.
Such a bad way to live.
Oh, who is to blame?
Who is to blame?
We can't stop
when
living.
We can't stop living. Oh, oh.
Live.
Live.
Live for life.
Life.
Live life for the children.
Live life for the children. Oh, for the children.
See, let's save the children. Let's save all the children.
Save the babies. Save the babies. And if you want to live, but you really care. I've been away. But now, baby, Billy's back home. I've done and said it all, did it all to be the same. But now I know that home is a woman to call my very own. There's a sinner crying out. Cause this time, baby, I won't leave. There is no place left for me to
you should try to hold on to that. You should try to hold your heart.